This episode of Weekly Spooky is brought to you by Boggy Creek, the series, free to watch on Tubi. Follow the exploits of Roger and Sarah, two researchers of the American Yeti Project, as they investigate Bigfoot and try to find proof positive of the legendary monster. But what other mysteries will they uncover in the mysterious backwoods of Boggy Creek? Starring Eric Roberts of The Dark Knight, Brink Stevens of Slumber Party Massacre, Mike Halinski of Haunted House and Sorority Row, and Joni Durian of Babysitter Massacre. Bigfoot just might be the least of their worries as they encounter cursed scarecrows, serial killers, witches, dangerous bank robbers, and ruthless poachers, among many others. So check it out today, free to stream on Tubi. Boggy Creek, the series. Executive produced by Fred Olen Ray, and directed by Henrik Kuto. Hey, that's me.
What's that? You want to be scared? Come with me. You will experience tales of horror, ghosts, and death. It is not recommended for the weak at heart. Listen in the dark. It's more fun that way. This is Weekly Spooky.
Hello, my friends. It's Wednesday. And you know what that means. It's time for a little spooky. In your weekly, I'm your host and narrator, Henrik Kuto, and we have a pulse-pounding story for you this week because it's part two of Calamity Jane versus Dracula. And I'll tell you what, in this second half, things are much more messy as the Count himself, the most famous vampire of all time, wreaks havoc in Deadwood, South Dakota. In the 1800s. But before we get to that, I want to take a moment to say thank you so much for listening to the show. Please, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe on your favorite podcasting app, and while you're at it, leave us a star rating. It helps more people find the spooky that is sorely missing in their week. And speaking of which, if you want to support the show even more, head over to weeklyspooky.com and click on Patreon. For as little as $1 a month, you can make sure the program never stops and get an exclusive bonus episode of the show every single month. In fact, I just released the first episode of Weekly Spooky's Creepy Pasta Special. It's pretty damn scary, I'm not gonna lie. I read the story, The Eighth Man. It's a story about a group of teenagers going on a camping trip. And maybe some of them aren't who you think they are. So make sure to check that out at weeklyspooky.com. Click on Patreon. It's the best way to support the show directly. But anyway, my friends, I think it's time to head back to the Old West and see how legendary gunslinger Calamity Jane handles the blood-sucking menace that is Dracula and his dark brides. So you better put on your cowboy boots and probably some sunscreen, too, since you're from the modern time. And let's head in to the story now. Last time on Calamity Jane versus Dracula, Jane has gone on a drunken rampage, killing owl hoots and bad guys all over the outskirts of Deadwood. She's mad. She's livid. Because her beloved Wild Bill Hickok is dead. Meanwhile, her old friend Colorado Charlie Utter is trying to figure out how to calm Jane down before the blood keeps on flowing. But speaking of blood flowing, rumors begin traveling around town about a mysterious stranger dragging a coffin in his wake as he passes through the inhospitable desert. One night at the bar, Colorado Charlie Utter and Calamity Jane encounter the undead. And that, my friends, is where we've left off. So now it's time for the thrilling conclusion of Calamity Jane versus Dracula. Calamity Jane
versus Dracula, Part 2, by John Oak Dalton.
The fangs of the saloon girl, Pearl, were closing in on Calamity Jane's neck. Over the pale, blood-spattered shoulder, Calamity Jane saw Wild Bill Hickok staring at her with blazing red eyes. Pearl's cold breath was fetid, the fangs coming closer, but Calamity Jane was paralyzed, for maybe the first time in her life, caught between the living and the dead.
"You will be his favorite bride," screeched Pearl.
Calamity Jane rallied and lifted her twin Smith & Wesson Model 3 Schofield 45s. One clicked on an empty chamber, but the other fired and blew a hole in Pearl's left eye that sprayed gore from behind onto the dusty street. Pearl's jaw swung loose, the teeth trying to close, but the black nails of both hands raked at Jane as she rolled free. The 45 was also clicking empty now, so she reached for the Hopkins and Allen Ranger 32 tucked in her belt. But Wild Bill, in whatever form he was taking, was pointing at the ground. Somehow, Jane knew he meant for her to grab at a board that Colorado Charlie Utter's flying body had knocked loose from the livery stable. She picked it up just as Pearl took another flying leap at her, but this time Pearl ran herself up on the jagged board, and the two women, living and unliving, went down in a heap. But only the gunfighter Calamity Jane stood, looking down at the inert creature with the sliver of wood run through her heart and out between her shoulder blades. She looked for the specter of Wild Bill, but saw nothing in the Deadwood streets, including the other creatures, like Pearl, who had melted into the shadows. Screams were now being heard farther away. A groan came from nearby. Calamity Jane strode over and towed Colorado Charlie with her boot. "I thought you was dead," Calamity Jane said casually. Utter groaned again. "I can't be kilt that easy, Jane. You ought to know that." Utter made himself sit up. Even though it was dark, he thought Calamity Jane was smiling. Yen, the town blacksmith, was the first to realize what was wrong down the road at the Gem Saloon. He heard the screams and smelled blood on the air, and remembered his village in China. He stepped away from his forge, which he worked at day and night, and whispered a single word, "Zhangxi." Yen walked out into the street, where his eyes quickly fell on a stranger in town, Kinch Yontis, laughing and clapping and dancing a little jig. Blood was leaking freely from a shoulder wound that the laughing man didn't seem to notice.
"The master feeds tonight," Yontis crowed.
Yen knew at once this man was Zi Ren, a paper servant to a dead master. So he reached out with his two calloused hands and snapped Yontis' neck. His insane laughter gurgled and stopped. Yen let the corpse fall to the ground and slipped back into the shadows, and then went back to his forge to get to work. Con Stapleton heard shots and screams coming from the direction of the gem and immediately checked the bolt on the sheriff's office and doused the lamp. He took the Spencer rifle down off its pegs and sat in his office chair hoping the ruckus would die down, and eventually the silence came and Stapleton stopped shaking. Then there was a gentle knocking at the door. Stapleton called out from where he was.
"Who's there?"
There was a soft, well-modulated voice on the other side of the door. "There's been a shooting."
"I done heard it,"
Stapleton shouted. "People need help," was the calm reply.
"I'll be along presently," Stapleton answered reluctantly.
There was a silence on the other side of the door. "I need help," came the voice. Stapleton stood slowly.
"Go holler for the doc. I can't help you none."
Again, Con Stapleton was faced with what seemed to be a great silence. "Open the door." To Stapleton, it sounded like some sort of soft command.
"I said I'd be along presently," but there wasn't much force in Stapleton's words. There was that long, dark silence. "Open the door." Stapleton started to wonder what exactly was going on. The voice did not sound angry, but he still lifted the Spencer and inched forward, slowly. "Please." There was a foreign inflection there. Stapleton didn't have much use for foreigners, but thought he might as well see what this person needed anyways. Stapleton's hand was on the handle. The door flew open. Stapleton had the Spencer up, but probably was never going to get off a shot, no matter who or what was on the other side of the door, anyway. It was a bad night in Deadwood. Al Swearingen was dead, and all of the women except a young gal named Lacey, who looked like she had aged 20 years from what she'd seen upstairs. The gem was all but gone in one night, so everyone adjourned to the Bella Union, where Colorado Charlie Utter turned Lacey over to his old friend, Madame Mustache, and the barkeep, Tom Miller, stood everyone a drink. Nobody has seen the sheriff, and the Chinese blacksmith wouldn't leave his forge. Some of the town council were there, including Saul Starr and the mayor, E.B. Farnham. John Manning, who was head of the volunteer fire department, offered to burn the gem to the ground that very night, but all were afraid the rest of Deadwood would also be gone. Nobody thought to go get the town marshal, or even said Con Stapleton's name. Whiskey Tom sat quietly and coughed blood and downed his namesake drink, and Calamity Jane stood and fingered her silver-plated Colt Navy revolver with the ivory grip. And everyone knew that revolver she kept on a rope around her neck, which was inscribed, J.B. Hickok, 1869. So Calamity Jane was thinking of ghosts and murder that night. She had stalked around for a while after the mass murder of the working girls and turned up nothing. Colorado Charlie Utter was the one to suggest they gather up a real posse and start looking building to building and house to house to make sure the killer did not quit Deadwood that night. Tom Miller pulled his Lamat revolver out from under the bar, the dangerous double-barreled weapon with hand-cast bullets coming out of the first barrel and buckshot coming out of the other. The bartender, Johnny Burns, currently out of a job as the gem was not to reopen, had all angles covered with a big Sharps rifle over one shoulder and a Derringer in his pocket. Sol Starr and his partner Seth Bullock joined up. Starr with a Colt Sheriff's Model single-action army revolver and Bullock packing his Remington Model 1875. Whiskey Tom seemed content with his silver-headed walking stick. Calamity Jane and Utter carried more guns and knives than you could take in at a glance. They started at the stable in case he decided to steal a horse from Old Man Brockius. Utter thought that would be a dangerous thing, as the crusty character was supposedly the uncle of the notorious outlaw Curly Bill Brockius, and thus nobody tried to cheat or even cuss the old man. But whoever had torn the stable owner's throat out had apparently never heard of Curly Bill. Calamity Jane narrowed her eyes at a broad sweep of dirt leading away from the stable. She pointed. "That there looked like the sign I'd done followed back from where I found Whiskey Tom." "What's that got drug there?" Whiskey Tom leaned on his walking stick. "A coffin," he said, and the two words kind of hung there. They went out into the street, but quickly lost the track of the dragged coffin in all the hoof prints and boot prints and wagon tracks of the busy frontier town. The five men and one woman had nothing more to say about that, and started their search. They worked until sunup, and went everywhere but back to the Bella Union and over to the sheriff's office, and that second decision was a bad one. But the sun did eventually come up, and Mayor Farnham said they should at least board up the gem, and those who had stayed up all night drinking in fear and excitement at the Bella Union, and still drunk enough to think that that would be the end of that, went ahead and did so. Once the hammering ended, a cloak of silence fell over the town. Everyone was inside, and the doors and windows closed, gun hands and cowpokes and soiled doves and miners and the very busy undertaker and the lone preacher who could have offered some words of comfort, but didn't. Calamity Jane and Colorado Charlie stood at the hitching post outside of the Bella Union and marveled at the quiet. But soon there came the padded feet of the stray dogs heading away. And then a horse kicked the side out of the stable, and the thunderous hoofbeats of a half dozen mounts shattered that silence as they charged away and were gone. It roused Whiskey Tom from wherever he was, and he joined them at the post. A few moments later, there was an awful loud scratching and scuffling, and Calamity Jane turned towards the sound. And then a wave of rats coursed its way down the center drag of Deadwood with an eerie, chittering noise. A haze of dust followed in their wake, and when it settled, the terrible silence fell once more.
"I didn't think there was that many rats in Deadwood," Utter said.
"There was that many in the gem," Calamity Jane answered. There was a loud neigh, almost like the shriek of some hidden beast, and there was Jane's big, scarred Appaloosa, prancing and flashing its hooves and baring its teeth at the far end of town, but coming no further. Utter gave it an unsettled look.
"If that hell creature won't come into town, then we may be doomed," he said.
But what caught Calamity Jane's eye was the open door of the blacksmith shop, the only place where sound and noise had been heard off and on all day.
"Did somebody talk to the blacksmith?" she asked.
"I think Bullock poked his head in there, but you know them Chinamen keep to themselves," Utter stated. Calamity Jane made for the open door as the others watched. Calamity Jane stepped inside and watched Yen at his forge. The heat calmed the chill coursing through her veins. Jane looked on as Yen removed a flat slab of steel from the fire, its edges too red to look at, radiating heat.
"I reckon you know what we're up against?" Calamity Jane finally asked.
Yen just looked back at her and nodded. "He is a creature of the living dead."
"Like a haint?"
"Worse, as these feed off the blood of the living."
"Yeah, I done saw that last night."
Calamity Jane looked at the cooling blade.
"Is this how you kill one of these dirt-nap Johnnies?" Jane asked. "It looks like the end of a shovel."
"It can be used for a shovel. After." Calamity Jane understood this. She had used a shovel. After. Yen sat the flat blade on the ground next to a hook-shaped piece of metal already cooling. "I'll sharpen it. Then it can be used for the killing strike which removes their heads." Jane looked at the markings of the deadly weapon.
"So what's the hook for?"
"To distract them until the blow can be dealt."
"Stabbing only distracts these Jaspers?"
"Yes."
"And you know all this how?"
Yen looked up from his work. "I killed Tu Jiangshi. It is part of the reason I had to leave China. Now, can you bring wood from a cemetery?" Yen acted like he had expected Jane all along, and Yen knew, of course, Calamity Jane spent many days and nights at Mount Moriah Cemetery. She only nodded.
"When you need this here stick?"
"Before nightfall. When the metal cools, I will join the two pieces with the wood to make the moon tooth spade." Calamity Jane had her thumb in her gun belt.
"Then we hunt?"
Yen looked at her, his eyes glittering. "No, calamitous one. Then we will be hunted." It seemed like, without anyone saying exactly why, most of Deadwood crowded into the Bella Union that night, where Tom Miller and Johnny Burns both poured drinks and kept their guns at hand. Down at one end of the long main street, Sol Star and Seth Bullock set up patrol. At the other, Colorado Charlie Utter and the white-suited man called Whiskey Tom held the road. Calamity Jane and Yen were in the blacksmith shop and left alone. Earlier,
Utter had stopped to bring Jane a plate of victuals and was astounded to find her asleep on a stool in the corner while Yen sweated over his anvil. Utter had not slept in 2 days and didn't know when he would again. The first strange thing that happened that night was the door to the sheriff's office banged open and Con Stapleton finally emerged. Bullock was the one who spotted him, and he and Star followed him curiously as a giggling Stapleton made his way down the street and into the church. "Makes sense," nodded Bullock, "but I don't see God anywheres near this." There was a lone gunshot within the church, and the two partners quickened their steps. Inside, they saw that Stapleton had found some guts somewhere and shot the town preacher in the head. He was, with great enthusiasm, tearing the religious iconography down from the humble walls of the church. He met the pair's dumbfounded looks with crazed, red-rimmed eyes. "This holy place is a blight in the Master's kingdom," Stapleton cried out, and smashed a wooden cross against the wall, splintering it in two. Stapleton wiped sweat and drool from his face. "I told the Master I would do this work for him. I would profane this place for him, and in exchange he would have to destroy the only other obstacle to his kingdom. Of all those to die to serve him tonight, Calamity Jane must be first." For the first time, Bullock felt pity for Stapleton, so he shot him in the face and watched the back of his head spray across the ruined altar. "Going again, Calamity Jane? Hell, this might be over quicker than we thought." Star just looked at him. "You wanted to be sheriff anyways." A great gust of cold wind blew in behind them. Without thinking, Bullock turned and fired his Remington as a large, flapping dark shape descended on them. Whether a bullet hit flesh, neither man ever knew. Colorado Charlie Utter had just stepped out of the Undertaker's parlor with Whiskey Tom when he heard the shots and recognized Bullock's barking Remington. The white-suited gambler had just retrieved his ivory-gripped, nickel-plated Model 1877 Colt Lightning from the worn holster of Kinchiantis, who had conveniently left it there while getting his neck snapped by the big-handed town blacksmith. The two men exchanged glances. "Before we venture forth, I must admit I'm not commonly called Whiskey Tom," he said to Utter. "I didn't figure that was the name your mama gave you. When I feel like I need a respite from the constant fear of back-shooting and gun challenges, I take the moniker Whiskey Tom and go deal faro a while." "A good plan," Utter agreed. "In case I die tonight and lay toes up next to the great Wild Bill Hickok, I would prefer the wooden cross to bear the name John Henry Holliday." Utter blinked and nodded. "Pleasure to know you, Doc." And then Utter filled his hand with his favorite gun, his trusty Colt Model 1873 Peacemaker, and stepped into the road. Doc Holliday followed. They were aiming for the church, but stopped when they saw the ragdoll body of Tom Miller get thrown through the bat wings of the Bella Union. His prized Lamat spun in the dirt until Utter picked it up and fired first one barrel, and then the buckshot barrel, at the black-suited figure backlit in the doorframe. He was either blown or, Utter feared, flew out of sight. Utter and Holliday advanced slowly as terrible screams pierced the night air. The lanterns inside went out, and the pair stopped as their eyes adjusted to the gloom. Holliday was the first to separate black from black and see a gaunt, cloaked figure racing towards him. His Colt Lightning spat fire, but the figure kept coming, and suddenly the figure was on him, and Holliday saw the flash of white, pointed teeth. Utter tried to draw a bead without killing the legendary gun hand. A gurgling yell came from Holiday's lips, and the unmistakable sound of feeding from the other figure. Just as Utter thought he should take his shot and damn the outcome, the pale, black-suited being seemed to rise from the ground, gasping. "Unclean," came the choked voice. Doc Holliday gave a weak laugh. "That is one sobriquet that has never been attached to my name." The creature wiped Holiday's blood from his mouth, coughing, ignoring his former prey. Holliday reached for his fallen silver-tipped walking stick and grasped it by its head. He yanked and the head came free, pulling a long rapier blade with it. The whisper of steel drew the flat-eyed gaze of the pale-faced figure, and as he turned back to Holiday, the fallen gunman rose and ran the length of the blade through the creature's stomach and out the other side.
"For Pearl," said Holiday.
Utter swallowed his gorge and emptied his peacemaker into the impaled figure. Under the spray of bullets, Utter watched in wonder as the creature backed itself off of Holiday's hidden blade. Utter's peacemaker clicked on an empty chamber, so he reached into his belt and pulled out a Smith & Wesson 44 Russian and pointed. But the figure moved through the shadows with inhuman speed and smacked the revolver out of his hand. The force bent Utter's arm back so quickly and with so much force, Utter felt something break in his wrist and his elbow and saw his vision dim. Utter fell to his knees, and there was blackness everywhere. Dark sky, darkness at the corner of his vision, a figure in a dark cloak in front of him, the only light, the red of the eyes, and the white of the teeth. With his good hand, he reached for the Barlow knife in his boot and hoped it would be enough.
"Ni hao, Lao Durin."
Utter dragged his spinning head around and saw the massive figure of Yen, the blacksmith, holding a huge metal-tipped weapon. Flames from the blacksmith forge were still flickering in the window behind him. At his side was Calamity Jane, thumbs hitched in her belt. Now the penetrating gaze of the creature fixed on the determined man in front of him.
"You are far from home, blacksmith."
"As are you."
"I only go where I'm invited. A man named Quincy Morris offered me a ranch in Texas in exchange for the life of a woman named Lucy."
"Did you keep your bargain, creature?"
"Da. She has eternal life."
"Enough parley!" shouted Calamity Jane, and spun her Wells Fargo coach gun around from her back, loosing buckshot at the pale, grinning face. In the next moment, a giant flapping bat was in its place and taking wing. Yen stepped forward with the moon tooth spade and swung the crescent-shaped end at the bat. He severed off a chunk of wing, and the creature spun in the air and fell. When Jane next looked, the black-suited figure was lying there, but its pale, long-nailed hand was crawling away under its own power. Calamity Jane pulled her twin Schofield 45 calibers and fired, and the white claw danced in the dirt until it was shreds. The gasping creature was up on its elbows and knees and fixing red eyes on Calamity Jane.
"When I tire of you, you will give both your hands to me, willingly, and more."
The sound of the whispering voice chilled Utter worse than the pains in his arm.
"I reckon I am already plumb tired of you," Calamity Jane answered, and reached for the silver-plated Colt Navy revolver that had belonged to Wild Bill, the one he had told her in the dream had to be used, if that was indeed a dream.
As the creature raised its arms and seemed to grow larger in the shadows in the street, Calamity Jane scrunched one eye shut and shot out both of the dead thing's red ones. The creature's scream shattered the windows of the Bella Union and several other windows on the street. The creature was back on its knees, its one clawed hand reaching out and clasping at the air, seeking. As the sound of the unearthly scream died away, an answering whinny was heard. And then there rose another black shadow. And it was the big, scarred Appaloosa charging down the main strip. The Appaloosa stopped suddenly, reared up, and brought its hooves down on the chest of the flailing monster. The creature landed flat on its back. There was a crunch like old kindling, and then the terrible smell of an open grave. And Yen took that moment to stride forward and swing the moon-tooth spade once more with his considerable might. The pinned creature's head flew from its shoulders and bounced into the road. It rolled right up to Charlie Utter, himself lying prone, and he saw the white fangs still gnashing. In the next moment, Calamity Jane stepped up, put one boot foot on the thing's temple,
and stuck her navy colt in its mouth, and after the resulting shot, there wasn't enough to rub out with the sole of her boot. Then Colorado Charlie Utter closed his eyes. For many days after, the Undertaker was busier than the dock. Utter knew things were returning to normal some weeks later when he was back on his old town horse, Plover, and seeking Calamity Jane at the Mount Moriah Cemetery. Two things had changed with Utter. He had his arm in a sling and a star on his chest. Jane showed greater concern for the badge. She squinted up at him from Wild Bill's graveside where she sat with an empty bottle. "How are you going to keep the peace with one wing?" she asked. Utter shrugged. "It's peaceful enough for now. And there ain't many alive that wants the job. E.B. Farnham talked me into it. I heard Wyatt Earp rode into town." Utter nodded. "He did. But it was only to fetch Doc." "That's good. We don't need the Earps asking too many questions." Utter looked at her narrowly. "We're telling everybody we had the smallpox run through." "Well, that there will discourage visitors. Where's that evil hoss you ride around on? Everybody but it and you are accounted for these days. Even that old mud of Tom Miller's Whatette Fred Webb's three fingers slunk back in." Calamity Jane gestured vaguely. "He's never far." "That's what scares me." Utter studied Jane. "Why don't you fetch up on old Plover here and I'll give you a lope back into town." To Utter's modest surprise, Calamity Jane nodded her head and stood. She took a long look around. "Don't reckon I'm coming out here much after this," Calamity Jane said aloud. Utter just watched her. She looked him full in the face. "I spent a lot of time since Bill died looking for and talking to Haints. I weren't in the flesh and blood world, but I weren't with the dead as I wished for. I done learned you don't want to live between the living and the dead." Utter just nodded and stuck his hand out, and Calamity Jane climbed up on Utter's old town horse, and the animal turned back towards Deadwood. Wyatt Earp noticed Doc wasn't getting any better. He seemed sicker and weaker, and then broke out in blisters, so Earp decided they should travel at night to keep his old pard out of the sun. They weren't long out of Tombstone, but Holiday said he needed a rest, so Earp went ahead and built a little fire before dawn. Holiday looked across at Earp, and it seemed to the lawman that Doc's eyes glittered red in the fire. Earp offered Holiday coffee, but he frowned and shook his head. "There's a thirst upon me, but that is not it. I'm fresh out of hooch until we hit town, Doc." Holiday mused into the fire. "I spent so much time close to the end of this mortal coil. I wondered why I waited there so long." Earp set his battered tin cup down. "You okay, Doc?" It looked to Earp like Holiday suddenly was not so much resting as coiled there. "I am indeed a new person, Wyatt. And Tombstone awaits."
Was that scary and fun? Well, you're darn tootin'. I had a great time reading this story with you guys, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And a big thank you to John Oak Dalton for writing that excellent, scary Old West classic in the making. We don't do a lot of two-parters on Weekly Spooky, but if you enjoyed it, please let us know. Send us an email at weeklyspooky@gmail.com. Let us know what you like about what we're doing, and I promise you we'll keep on doing it. Speaking of keeping the show going, huge thank you to all the folks who have been joining up on Patreon. This week has been one of the best weeks for growth on the Patreon in a very, very long time, and I would love to see us reach 100 patrons. It would really mean the world to me. We're at 84 right now, and I can't say how much it means to me. And speaking of thank you to the patrons, I want to say an especially big thank you to our Patreon podcast boosters. These are folks who pay just a little bit extra every month to hear their names on the show. And they are Christopher Sullivan, Kathy Prokay, Gino Lyons, Karen Wiemet, Jack Kerr, Jeff and George Hilton, Craig Cohen, and Kevin Fry. Thank you all so much for the support, and right now is pretty much the best time ever to join our Patreon, because we have two, count them, two exclusive podcasts being published every single month, as well as behind-the-scenes looks at the show, vlogs, and some exclusive pieces about my movie-making career, including a brand new film, which we'll be releasing next month. So, if you get a chance, go to weeklyspooky.com, click on Patreon, and become part of our team that brings you the spooky on the weekly. But for now, for executive producer Rob Fields, for my producer Dan Wilder, and my composer Ray Mattis, as well as myself, Henrik Kuto, I will talk at you later. And make sure you kick the dust off your spurs, partner.
Thank you for listening. Make sure to find your way back next week. But for now, you are safe. Trust me.